I'm going to start with, I was just telling a story about how the staff of the symphony sat around and watched the Met Live HD DVD of Peter Grimes. And I remember that in one of those little between act interviews, you were asked how you prepared for this role, Tony, and you said something to the effect of, well, I think I was born for it. Can you talk about how so?
Well, I grew up very, very shy, painfully shy. So singing was my way of expressing myself. My first solo in church was Jesus Loves Me. I was a boy soprano. I grew up in the Baptist church and had a wonderful music program. And the church organist, she and her husband would travel to New York City and hear the boys' choirs there and come back, and she would give me the descants to all these wonderful Christmas carols, and I would sing the high descants while the choir was singing. But I was painfully shy, and I grew up in a very small community and felt always misunderstood as a child. I was a very large kid, and I'm still a large man. And oftentimes, large kids don't get coddled and, you know, oh, you're so cute. It was always, well, you need to lose a couple of pounds. And I always had sort of ill-fitting clothes. My parents did their best to dress me well, but I just grew at a rapid rate. And then being given this voice was a gift, but it was also a challenge for me because it was just not the thing to do, you know, to have a boy soprano voice growing up. We didn't have all these voice competitions that we have on TV today. So I found great comfort. My first opera singer I heard was Leontine Price when she would do the scholarship fund for African Americans on TV. And she would sing, you know, we don't need a handout, just a hand. And when I first heard an opera singer, I was just, wow. I was just mesmerized and amazed by it all. And then my voice just grew operatically. I had wonderful music in the public schools. I had wonderful guidance that way. So I'd planned on a career as a minister of music in a church. And I had a teacher who told me I should really go toward the performance realm. And that's what I really wanted to do. But again, I was too shy. So I had to find repertoire and roles that fit me. So when I was living in New York and I was doing my five arias for auditions, of course, I always wanted to sing Tamino. I never got to sing Tamino, but I had to find repertoire that fit me. And so Peter Grimes was actually my first big role at Tanglewood Music Festival in 1996. I was a student there, and it was the 50th anniversary of the American premiere of Peter Grimes. So originally they wanted me to audition for Bob Bowles, but I really related to the character of Peter Grimes because I always felt misunderstood and always on the outside. So now in my life, I've embraced that and have championed and really have reached out to homeless people and mental illness, and am a big advocate and spokesperson for those things. I think it's very important.
Can we talk a little bit about Peter? I was thinking of kind of introducing the audience to who this person is. So who is he at this moment in time? What does he long for? What is holding him back?
I think what he longs for is what we all long for, and that's to be loved and understood. And unfortunately, sometimes what we long for and we dream about are things that we often reject. There are many blessings in being a singer, but there are also the fact that you have to deal with loneliness and isolation of being on the road. And I think he says, he's such a dreamer, he says, I'll marry Ellen, I'll marry Ellen. I'll fish the sea dry, flood the market. In my interpretation, he wants that relationship with Ellen. He wants a family unit. I think he probably wants children. I don't think there's any hidden underlying things that people kind of read into Peter Grimes. I think it's what you see is kind of what you get. And the main thing is just he's misunderstood. And I know with working with mental health clients, how often they just talk about being misunderstood, how homeless people, you know, a lot of people think they choose that. And some do, but a lot of them often feel very misunderstood and feel like they're unlovable. And it's very difficult when you grow up in a situation where you don't know what love really is. You don't find love in things. Things do not bring us happiness and love. It's people and relationships and nature. I've said this before. This opera is about holding a mirror up to ourselves and society, and how cruel society can be, and also how cruel we can be to ourselves, and oftentimes reject something that we dream and long for and which is attainable and reachable.
I was going to ask you the same thing, Susanna. Who is Ellen at this moment, and what does Ellen want?
Ellen is a widow. I must think of her as a youngish widow because I'm not particularly old, so I have to play her that way. I think she finds Peter as a person that strikes her to be very shy, very hard to get to know, and very misunderstood. And Ellen is a schoolmistress and has an affinity for communicating with children, with people who don't have a real sense of their emotions or a capacity to act socially appropriately all the time. And so she is able to kind of hone in instinctually on what she thinks they need. And I think throughout the opera, she tries to help Peter as much as she possibly can in how she thinks she's helping. But at the end of the day, she realizes that her help is not actually helping him, that he needed something she couldn't give. And I fear that, you know, everybody wants to think their character is the most loving and wonderful and right-sided things. But I have to say that I think it's her own kind of self-righteousness. She's always standing up saying that all of y'all are wrong. This is right. Y'all need to stop talking. You need to stop gossiping and listen to what's right. And at the end of the day, she didn't listen to what was right. And I think that's a challenge.
You know, in talking about these characters, they almost have a Shakespearean sense to them.
In what way?
I guess in the sense that they both kind of had these tragic flaws in a way.
Doesn't everyone?
Perhaps, yeah.
I think I find them to be readily identifiable people. I don't find them to be arch characters in any way. I think they are real. I think they are flawed. I think they are normal people. And I think that's what's so moving about this piece is that every person in the opera is somebody you know from your own community, somebody you know from school, somebody you know from your church, somebody you know from your social circles. And so you can identify very easily and see what doubt does to people and what gossip does to people and finding what the actual truth is, not necessarily what you think the truth is for everyone. It's interesting.
How does Britten portray the psychology of your characters, and not just of your characters, but of the village itself through his music?
Well, I think with Peter, he identifies so well, again, what I said about rejecting love and being misunderstood. I see it in my everyday life. I've experienced it. I think that we all understand loneliness and isolation. And again, what Susanna said about feeling that you're misunderstood. And so I think that Britten is great at presenting that. And then Ellen is such a strong woman to stand up to the townspeople and is actually fighting for Peter and for them to understand him. And she cares for the boy and is trying to protect him. And so in my interpretation of the role of Peter Grimes, it's just a very bad stroke of bad luck because people always ask me, is he guilty or not guilty? And I think it's for the audience to decide. Did he really just have a streak of bad luck? I think he does give the boy a hard slap on the back. Be a man, you know, we hear that growing up and no crying. So again, I related to that because I was a big guy. You know, big guys don't cry. Big guys don't have emotions. And so I think Peter Grimes grew up that way.
Do you think that he knows his own strength?
No, I don't think he knows his own strength.
And that's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary when I think that what I see when you do it, I see that you have these bursts of emotion and these bursts of physical emotions that are scary because you know that it's an outburst of emotion, but with extreme strength.
Right.
And I recognize that it's something that the character wouldn't know his own strength. How right. would he be able to know how to really treat a child?
Right.
I think the other thing about Peter is he doesn't know his own strength, but he also doesn't really know his own capacity to love.
Exactly. And I don't think that he feels like he is lovable. And that's always...
What does he say? That I'll marry Ellen, but not yet.
Yeah.
At the beginning. I'm not ready. It's not time.
Right.
I got to do stuff first before I'm...
Yeah, he feels like he needs to prove himself.
Mm-hmm.
He has to achieve these things.
Right.
And thus he can win her.
Yeah, right. He says that wealthy merchant Grimes will set up household and shop. You will all see it.
And then he'll marry.
And then
Ellen's just like, come on, it's time. Let's get a move on here. I don't know. I think Britten finds those kinds of dramatic and emotional colors through a lot of his rhythms. Each character has their own language that he uses to call them or to kind of find their vocal line. For me, one of the coolest effects is what he uses in the embroidery aria towards the end of the opera, Ellen's aria. She's talking about how this sweater that she knitted for the little boy is the clue that will condemn Peter Grimes. And she just realizes that, and she begins to brood about what her experience was like in sewing things for children and having these connections with children and just wanting to make their lives better and thinking that making this sweater was making this boy's life better and how wonderful it was. And Britten gave these lush, long lines with strings and just real connection and heart. And when she says, "Now my embroidery is the clue whose meaning we avoid. We're not facing the truth that this is the clue that's going to condemn Peter Grimes." And at that moment, the entire orchestra drops out and it's cold and it's stark and they pluck their strings and it's very harsh and it's very short rhythms and it's very stark. It's a stark realization for her. And for him to musically be able to set that up so clearly in a crux scene for Ellen, I think is a testament to what he does throughout the entire piece. That's just one example of something. Some of the music that is the most remarkable music in the entire piece are the interludes that the orchestra gets to play. It's always fun for them to play a storm. There are a lot of colors, there are a lot of rhythms, there are a lot of dynamics to play, and they really literally get swept away, and it's an extraordinary score for them. I know they're excited.
Now, you played this together at Aspen this last summer. You just had your first rehearsal today, but How does the piece reshape, reconfigure when you return to it again, especially your relationship? Does it change? Is it changing?
It has to, because we have a different cast. We have other singers that are different than the ones that we were able to work with in Aspen. The orchestra is different. The conductor is different. Everybody has different ideas. So it's going to be a different piece. But Aspen was my first opportunity with the part, so for me, it has deepened already just in that amount of time. I can only imagine what it's like for Tony. I'd be very curious.
I've been singing the role, I think, 17 years, but it's not an easy role to sing. First of all, I think the hardest part is the psychological part of the role, and then the actual singing the part. Emotionally, it's such a heavy role, and then to add the singing to it and not let the emotion get into the singing. And Susanna is just a wonderful colleague, and I'm not just saying that, and she's a very giving artist, and she comes from a very honest place, and that's the beauty of her work. She's singing all over the world, but she's a gracious and very giving artist, and it's from the heart. And for me, I started singing because it was a form of communication. Singing is communication. And she does that so well. And when she and I were together at Aspen, we automatically clicked. We only had a week to put it together, as we do here. But it's an energy and a force that we both share, and that it's all about the text and the music. And neither of us have egos about, you know, listen to my beautiful voice. We're the type of artists, and I'm speaking for her, but I know her work, but we're the type of artists that it's about the story and about the communication. And I know the audience, when they come to the performances, will hopefully feel that we're about storytelling. My favorite singers are great storytellers. So I can't say enough good things about Susanna.